take it slowly, brother. Let it go. Go home. Go home. Go home.
Simon Welton, you're listening to
this is Danielle from Offside
101.9 FM coming out of Vancouver. Coming up right away is the White Noise show. Coming up right after that, of course, is the White Noise after show. And today I'll be on the air with the wonderful Chris Allen. So if you have any questions for him at all, put them into whitenoiseubc@gmail.com, or you can send us to our Facebook group, or you can even tweet us at whitenoiseubc. So send in any questions you have for him, or maybe there's something in the show that offends you and you fancy having a shout at me, do that too, and we'll definitely read them out. And yeah, so this is without further ado, White Noise. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's show is brought to you by Harry's Hypodermic Needles, medicine and a weapon in one. Our first piece tonight comes from right here in Vancouver. It is the Canadian edition of Ultimate Leader. Unfortunately, the legendary One Choker is no longer with us. He passed away recently after a long battle with autoerotic asphyxiation.
Good evening. I'm Billy Bludgeon. And welcome to Canada's Ultimate Leader. Like all subpar Canadian content, we have taken programming from another country and slapped the word Canada on the front. We won't let you down here, though. We have an action-packed schedule of 3 fights to bring you, including Stephen Sociopath Harper battles Rob Rehab Ford. Then Liberal leader Justin the Pretty Boy Trudeau takes on the NDP's Thomas the People's Champ Mulcair. And finally, Canada's original PM, John A. MacDonald, battles alcoholism and delusion. Joining me in the commentary booth for all the action is the legendary cage fighter and pundit, Richard the Narcissist Nixon.
Thank you, Billy, for those warm words. I cannot overstate how excited I am to watch tonight's event. I'm recording everything.
Nothing new there?
For sure. I love recording things, though they won't let me record in the girls' locker room anymore. I just wanted to know who they were going to vote for, I swear.
Uh-huh. So, any chance we will see you back in the cage for next season American Ultimate Leader?
No, me and the producer, Simon Cowell, are no longer on speaking terms.
Why is that?
He wouldn't let me replace Zane in One Direction. I would have been perfect. I am the original bad boy.
You would have been perfect, I agree. There are too many Brits in One Direction.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm forming a new band, the Tea Party Direction. We just play music based on the knowledge of people with absolutely no formal training or credibility.
Sounds like you'll be popular in the South.
Oh yeah, we'll be bigger than Jesus, slightly smaller than diabetes.
Speaking of diabetes, Rob Ford just arrived in the arena. He is proudly waving the Japanese flag as he walks to the cage. I'm getting word he confused it with the Canadian flag.
Well, Rob Ford's vision is mostly motion-based. It's similar to a T-Rex.
His opponent, Stephen Harper, is walking into the arena and is being mobbed by both of his fans. They can't get enough of him, that pair. Oh, and one of them has stolen his hat as a souvenir. Harper's bodyguard returns the favor by taking the fan's right index finger. Ouch.
That old thief's a little twerp.
That fan is about 84 years old, Dick.
Hey, how dare you call me Dick?
But your first name is Richard. Dick is short for Richard.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, that explains a lot. Why the hell is Dick short for Richard?
I don't know. Perhaps the first Richard set a bad precedent.
Well, it's a good job I set such a great example for other Richards to follow.
Uh-huh. So, Harper and Ford are in the cage. Harper wearing the yellow wrestling singlet and prescription goggles. Rob Ford wearing the black compression shorts and muumuu.
The muumuu does provide the extra breeze in the stuffy arena air. It might be important in the fight goes into the later rounds.
Do you really think Ford has the stamina to last into the later rounds?
Definitely. He'll be redder than a naive sunbather, but he'll be there in round 4 and 5, grinding away like an etard.
Ah, etards. Your most hated enemy after Democrats.
Uh-huh.
You did, after all, start the war on drugs.
Yeah, I did. And the Environmental Protection Agency, and I ended school segregation in the South. Hippies don't know whether to hate me or to love me.
The fighters are ready. The ref is as neutral as always. Today's ref is Pope Francis, or as we know him in the cage fighting world, Argy Bargy Frank.
You can always trust the Catholics, but there are no Quakers.
You're a Quaker?
Yes.
Really? Every time anyone mentions Quakers, I just want porridge.
I know, it's an odd name. You sound like a junior college basketball team.
Oh, right! The fight! They move to the center. Rob Ford is fighting Southpaw. No, wait, he's fighting Orthodox. Southpaw. Orthodox. Wait, no, he's just swaying a lot. Harper is circling to the right. Right, right again. The very far right now. He just loves it out there. He is refusing to come over to even the center. Never mind the left. Ford swings a combination, and uppercut glances off Harper's chin. Harper stumbles back and shakes it off. Rob Ford is exhausted. He pulls guard. Wait, no. He's just having a lie down. Harper doesn't take the bait. His grappling is very poor right here. He refuses to work with anyone else to make things better. Pope Frankie stands him up. Ford looks fatigued. His arms are hanging low.
He looks like Brock Lesnar's before picture right now.
Harper throws a huge overhand right, but it bounces off Ford's face. Nothing can penetrate Rob Ford's skull. Doesn't he know that?
People have said the same of Harper.
Harper smells blood, though. He is now throwing everything with bad intentions. Combo after combo. He is looking for the finish. Ford is absorbing all the damage. Harper's beginning to fatigue, but he keeps swinging through the burn.
Wow, Ford has barely flinched. I think Pillow Hands Harper could be running out of ideas.
He does seem to be losing steam, but Ford looks like he's finally losing consciousness. He wobbles. He falls forward onto Harper, pinning him down. Harper's face is firmly sealed by Ford's right armpit. Harper taps instantly. Rob, rehab Ford wins.
Wow, he played to his strengths beautifully there.
Rob Ford is very emotional in the cage right now. He is breaking down in tears. I'm getting word in my ear that apparently Harper just told him he is not allowed to come to any more conservative parties. What a sore loser.
Ah, play nice, Steven. It's not like you have many friends as it is.
Well, regardless, Ford is in the final, and now we will find out who will be joining him. Our next fight is Justin Pretty Boy Trudeau versus Thomas the People's Champ Mulcair. Your thoughts, Nixon?
Well, in America, these two would be the same people. Democrats. They differ only in how much of my friend's money they want to give to the poor.
What about their fighting credentials?
Silver Spoon Trudeau is gonna struggle against Hard Knocks Mulcair. Trust me, that beard hides a granite chin, and the only cup he uses is for his tea.
I hear Trudeau has inherited some of the magic of his father.
Well, if he's half as good as his father, he'd still be the second greatest fighter in Canadian history.
Mulcair is entering the arena first, bare-chested. He refuses any corporate sponsorship. He does this for the love of the game.
I think he just wants us all to see that tattoo. I mean, look at it. It's beautiful.
It is a marvelous one. Who would have thought a stripper riding a unicorn could look so classy?
Oh, I know that. I know it's true. I mean, I have a smaller version on my right buttock. Me and Ronald Reagan got them when we were still dating.
Pardon?
I meant debating. Sorry. When we were debating.
When were you debating Ronald Reagan?
When I was experimenting in college. Let's move on, please.
Okay. Trudeau is now making his way into the arena. He is sporting his typical red and gold house coat and a beret.
He is not pulling that off.
Well, thankfully his manager just did, as Justin disrobes. Shakes out his limbs and steps into the cage. Now he's stepping out again. Apparently he's unsure of the platform. Okay, now he's in again. He apparently is just going to make it up as he goes along. Frankie's having a word with both of them. Mulcair is attempting to intimidate Trudeau. He is beating his chest wildly. What a majestic beast that man is.
Reminds me of Tyson in his heyday, except a bit less rapey.
That is not saying much. They begin. They move forward. Mulcair stays low and dives for the double leg takedown. Trudeau sprawls, defending the takedown. Mulcair grabs his hair and pulls it back. Trudeau latches onto his beard. They are a Canadian standoff.
Who is going to blink first?
Trudeau rolls out of it and goes for the spinning back fist. Mulcair ducks under and comes up with the right hook. Trudeau goes down. He's right back up. He tries the capoeira kick. Too flashy. Mulcair sees it coming a mile off and leaps out of the way. He leaps back into the pocket and sinks his thumb into Trudeau's right eye socket. Trudeau is in agony. He shoves a fish hook into Mulcair's mouth.
Gross.
Wow, they are so evenly matched. Mulcair shoves his thumb in deeper. Trudeau shoves a thumb in Mulcair's left eye. Mulcair looks like an Edward Munch painting. He takes his thumb out of Trudeau's eye socket, steps back. Trudeau lets go of him and... oh, sickening! Mulcair headbutts Trudeau like it's a Guy Ritchie film. Trudeau is out cold. Mulcair wins. It'll be Rob Rehab Ford versus Thomas the People's Champ Mulcair in the final. Join us next week for the exciting conclusion of Canada's Ultimate Leader.
Thank you, Billy and Dick, for that fine piece of programming. I always fancied a career in the cage. Not fighting. I prefer cage dancing. Very empowering. Next up tonight is a theatre piece out of New York.
Excuse me, officer?
Yeah?
Do you have a moment?
No.
I just have a quick question.
Well, Google it.
Come on, you're meant to be a public servant.
I'm not a butler, I am a law enforcer.
You're not Judge Dredd. Just give me a tiny moment of your time.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to step away from my vehicle, sir.
Vehicle? It's a bike with a police sticker.
Sir, don't make me taser you, sir.
Stop calling me sir. I'm 18. You're only saying it to appear you're being polite to me while you're actually being a complete dick.
Sir, I am giving you 3 seconds, sir, to step away from the vehicle.
Yeah, go on, taser me. There are 4 people watching us now, and they're all recording this on their phones.
Fine. So what the hell do you want?
I was just wondering if you could direct me to somewhere where I can buy some marijuana. That's all.
Excuse me?
Marijuana. You know, weed, cannabis, dope, skunk. Don't you police have to keep up with the terms kids are using?
I know what it is, sir, and it is illegal, young man.
What?
Put your hands behind your back. You are being arrested for soliciting drugs from an officer of the law.
Wait. I meant medical marijuana.
Whoa! Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Yeah, you just go down there around the corner and there are 4 shops all in a row. They're all selling it.
Oh, thank you very much. It's quite all right.
No problem. You have yourself a nice day, sir.
Oh, you too. Lovely. Cheers.
Ah, the law. If only it made sense. Next up tonight is an excerpt from a very exclusive award ceremony I attended last week.
The winner is Lena Odin.
This is Lena's first award and her 4th time nominated.
Wow, this is just amazing. Finally, the validation I deserve. But there are so many people I do wish to mention. Firstly, my sister Heather, you are the most annoying, petty, and vindictive woman I have ever met. Your children are ugly, and your husband's a bore. My mother, who is always there for me. Why can't you just leave me the hell alone? And my father, who's never there for me. You are why I date much older men. My colleagues who worked alongside me for this job, they deserve none of the credit. They're about as dynamic as fresh roadkill. Lastly, my boss, Jennifer, who oversaw my work in the last 2 years, you are a massive bitch. And no one likes you, even if they do smile to your face. Thank you all for helping me to win this amazing award. I promise to forget you all on my newfound path, and I am so proud to be known as the Taco Bell Employee of the Month!
It's always important to remember who has wronged you. That piece was brought to you by Taco Bell. It's food, technically. Next up tonight is a diary entry from the award-winning diary of Terence Tripoli.
Dear Diary, today I locked eyes with an angel. I was sitting in Hooters, waiting for my post-workout jalapeno poppers. I had come straight from my workout at the gym, so I was still wearing my leotard and pumps. Good job, I look amazing in those. This angel noticed my outfit right away. She stared me up and down carefully. Someone must have then farted, because she suddenly had this very sudden, unexpected look of disgust. I smiled at her, but made sure only to do it out of one side of my mouth and raising one eyebrow. World-class flirting. She began to rise from her seat, her white and orange shirt tight against her ample bosom, just like mother's. Though, of course, she can't hold a candle to grandma's, mainly because they are fake and potentially flammable. She started moving towards my table. She stopped to chat with another couple of gentlemen. She was clearly a social butterfly, the kind of girl you take home to Mum. Though I hope at Mum's she doesn't flirt quite that much. Dad's already had 2 bypass surgeries. He couldn't have another. Finally, she removed her tongue from her friend's ear and carried on towards me. Another friend of hers, wearing a very similar outfit, stopped with her to chat. Women always do dress very similar. They are such slaves to trends. Finally, my darling approached. My palms became sweaty. My butt crack was wet enough beavers had begun building dams. At last, she reached my table. I looked into those dark, very tired-looking eyes, and she said, "Has anyone served you yet?" I nearly came in my pants right then. Dear God.
Ooh, unlucky, Terence. Just remember this rhyme. Tongue in another man's ear. Probably shouldn't go near. Next up tonight is a theatre piece out of Idaho. I thought they only did potatoes.
Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to Expensive Errol's Cheap Jewellery Store. How may I help you?
Hi there. I'm looking for a ring.
For what occasion? Actually, let me guess. It's for your stepmother's 50th birthday.
No.
Oh, I'll give up then.
To my girlfriend.
Oh, right. Never have guessed that.
I want to get her something that says, "I love you," but we haven't been going out for long enough for me to propose to her. So I was thinking a promise ring.
How long have you been dating?
6 months.
No, too soon, buddy. What you need is a pencil you in ring.
Oh, what?
It's one step below the promise ring. It says, "I really like you, I think."
Oh, right.
Does that correctly represent how you're feeling?
Yeah, that's right on the money.
Speaking of which, what's your budget?
I was thinking around $100.
Oh, nice. You can buy a whole collection for that. Let's start with this one.
Okay. Yeah, not bad. What's it made of?
Paper clips.
Do you have anything a bit more natural?
Oh, try this.
Oh, that's nice. What do you call that?
String.
Oh, that might be the one.
Hold your horses, hang on. Have a look at this beauty.
Oh my goodness. You're right, look at that.
Huh?
It's perfect.
Uh-huh.
What is it?
That, sir, is the finest tinfoil available on today's market. It's conflict tinfoil. It comes out of the Congo, but it's all right. I know a guy who knows a warlord.
Perfect. How much?
Don't worry about it. Just give me your wallet. I will give you the ring and
Hortensia.
And Hortensia will give you her heart, unless you change your mind later.
Deal. Oh, I can't wait to see the look on her face when I don't get down on one knee and make a non-committal expression of my love.
Oh, romance has never been more alive, sir.
Wow, 6 months. My relationships don't usually last 6 hours, mainly because hookers charge by the hour. Next up tonight is a debate on organized religion. Is it great, or just there stopping you masturbate?
Good evening, and welcome to Debate Squad. I'm Ainsley June, and tonight we discuss organized religion, specifically Christianity. Is organization crucial to Christ, or is it the epitome of everything he was irked by? To discuss this matter, I am joined by nun and esteemed rapper Ursula Kane.
Big up yourself, Ainsley.
Anglican vicar Nikki Nail.
Hello.
And anti-church activist Phil Loward.
God hates you both.
Well, those are strong words, Phil. Would you care to elaborate?
Yes. You see, the organization of religion serves no other purpose than to control and manipulate people into behaving as people see fit, rather than to serve our Lord.
That is 100% grade A horse crap, Phil. You have been reading too many Dan Brown books. My church brings peace, love, and hip-hop to the masses.
Only as long as they are in your church do they get the big man's love.
Why wouldn't they be? We have rapping nuns.
Well, the corruption you're hinting at, Phil, is a symptom of the Catholic Church, not my Anglican denomination, which is a much more inclusive and progressive group of people.
Yeah, what with your rich history of being founded by Henry VIII so he could ditch his first wife for a better-looking one.
I'm sorry, I thought it was because she didn't provide a son.
No. It was an arranged marriage, and she had a face like a Picasso.
Don't you see? This is the problem I was talking about. God doesn't really care if you get divorced or are gay or wear a condom. He cares if you love all his creatures, if you avoid causing suffering, if you're not an arsehole.
No, he wants you to go to a specific kind of building on a Sunday and pray a very certain kind of way. He wants you to follow very specific rules that were made up by people who are definitely not him but claim to have the inside line on what tickles his fancy.
Don't forget, he wants you to dismiss the other millions of variations of religions and belief systems the history of humanity has created, because of course the rest of them are all completely wrong.
Wow, it's as simple as that.
Clear as day, Ainsley. There is only one path to the Lord.
Thank you, Debate Squad, for that religious awakening. It's like picking a girlfriend. You think you're making an informed decision, but you're probably actually just going for whatever's nearest. Last up tonight is another bit of theatre. I give you Shut Up and Take My Money.
Hello. Welcome to Dogs for the Blind. How may I help?
I would like to purchase one seeing eye dog, please.
Certainly. And who is a seeing eye dog for, madam?
Me.
But you're not blind. You just waved at me as you walked in, making eye contact.
I know. I never said I was. I just want to purchase a seeing eye dog, please.
But you can't just buy a seeing eye dog.
Why not?
You're not blind.
So? That didn't stop me from buying this wheelchair or this colostomy bag.
Well, seeing eye dogs are only for the blind, and they're in short supply.
But I have the money. It's just a really well-trained dog. Can't I just pay you to pay someone else to train an extra one for me?
No! Why do you even want one?
Because sometimes I have better things to do than see where I'm going. If I'm texting, the dog can lead the way. If I need to catch 40 winks on the way to work, the dog will be my autopilot. It's the convenience my modern life is missing.
Look, lady, I have been trying to get one of these mutts for years. It just ain't gonna happen. The blind people have got them all sewn up. Not literally.
Oh, thank God.
Trust me, you can't have one.
Fine. I will be on my way. I'm gonna go see if I can get one of those care workers who feeds you.
Good luck! They wouldn't give me the time of day.
I always fancied a seeing eye dog, but apparently they only date police canines. Next up tonight is a theatre piece about school. For some, it was the best days of their lives, because they suck at being adults.
Hello, Mr. Neville. Thank you for coming in. Please, take a seat.
Okay, which one is it? I bet it's Jenny. She's always in trouble. Has she been fighting again?
No, nothing like that.
She kicked the shit out of that last teacher.
No, yeah, I know, that was hilarious. But no, it's about your youngest, Harry.
Harry? But he's a good one. All the teachers love him.
Well, you see, that's it. One of his teachers, Mr. Collins, has informed me that Harry is dressing too sexy.
Pardon?
Harry is, how can I put this?
What are you saying?
I'm saying Mr. Collins is finding it very difficult to teach with that gorgeous son of yours just flaunting his perfect pecs in front of him. I mean, Harry needs to cover up.
Shouldn't Mr. Collins be the one controlling himself?
It's not just Mr. Collins, it's the janitor, it's the PE teacher, it's the women in his class. They're all gagging for it.
Well, I really think that is their problem, not his.
I really wish it was, Mr. Neville, but you have to understand, Mr. Collins and these girls are just unable to control themselves. They are giving in to their impulses. Haven't you ever been turned on by a sexy young boy?
No, but if I was, I would keep it to myself. What is Mr. Collins' first name? I'd like a word with him.
I'm sorry, but I really can't divulge that information.
Why not?
I don't really know what his name is. I think it might be Errol. Oh, I can't be right.
Look, this is ridiculous. My son should not be made to feel ashamed of himself because your staff are a bunch of pervs.
They are not pervs. The inquiry proved that beyond doubt, Mr. Neville. Now, if you would just have Harry put on a nice sweater and some jeans to cover up those lovely muscular glutes, everything will be fine.
No, Harry is free to express himself as he sees fit. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must get back to work. Those assless chaps won't sell themselves.
That was our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, featuring the voice talents of Mariana Mate, Connor Nishelput, Sierra Wiley, Victoria Bass, and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
All right, that was the White Noise Show. You're listening to the White Noise After Show. I'm Simon Welton, and we're joined in the studio by the awesome Chris Allen. Say hello, Chris.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And so if you have any questions for Chris or myself about the show, anything like that, make sure you send them in. We're going to have a quick song, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to start chatting. So you'll have a chance, you know, go to the toilet, whatever you got to do. But send your questions in to whitenoiseubc@gmail.com or also tweet them to whitenoiseubc. But we'll be back very shortly. This is Okra.
skills, learn some things. I decided that I would take on what I thought would be easy. I decided I'd re-caulk my bathtub. How hard can this be, right? So I grab my roommate, I start heading down to Home Depot. Well, my roommate decides it'd be fun to start screwing with me a little bit. And he goes, hey Chris, when we get to Home Depot, how are you planning for asking for the caulk? It's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you can't just go in there and be like, hi, I hear you have a fine selection of caulk. Might I see it? I'm like, shut up, that's not going to happen, right? And then I get down there, and now he's kind of in my head. And you guys know how, like, no one will ever help you at Home Depot? Well, I get in there, and this ninja Home Depot guy pops up, like, right in front of me. He's like, hi, welcome to Home Depot, how can I help you? And I didn't really get a chance to think about what to say, so I just said the first thing that came to my mind, maybe the worst thing I could have said. I just looked him right down the barrel, and I said, I need caulk. Yep, that's what I went with. Straight to the gayest part of my soul, and I just already slipped it up there. I need caulk. But this guy was cool, actually. I mean, I guess he gets that a lot. Yeah. And so he took me to the Isle of Caulk. It sort of sounds like a pirate porn movie, doesn't it? They're like, yar, welcome to the Isle of Caulk. You gotta wonder why Jack Sparrow wore so much eye makeup all the time, right? But anyways, I grab some caulk, and then I go home. So now my next job is I gotta take the old caulk off the bathtub, like the old dirty caulk. You guys can see how this is hard to talk about. But anyways, I'm trying to scrape off this old caulk, and it just won't come. I mean, I just can't get it off. So I'm like, am I an idiot here? I look up on the internet to see if I'm doing something wrong, and it turns out, I can't even make this up, that to remove the old caulk, you're supposed to first apply a substance called a caulk softener. I'm like, this is great, right? So I head back down to Home Depot, and I'm trying to be so serious, right? I walk up to this young guy at the customer service. I'm like, hi, can you tell me where I can find a caulk softener? And this guy, he thinks he's pretty funny. He goes, hey, Julie, one of your boyfriends is here. End of the day, guys, I got the job done. You got to come to my house and check out my gleaming white caulk. So I thought it was awesome. You guys are a great audience. Thanks.
All right, there you go. That was Chris Allen live at Laugh Lines in New Westminster. And yeah, that was a cracking bit there. A little bit more about Chris. Chris is a Vancouver-based comic. He's been doing it about 4 years. He was a finalist, Vancouver finalist at the Sirius FM Canada's Next Top Comic competition. He's also reached the semis of the People's Champ competition, which is another big one that happens every year in Vancouver. So yeah, he's been all over and he's performed across the country. So thanks for joining us in the studio, Chris.
All right, thanks for having me, Simon.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. So yeah, let's get a little bit into your background. So, like, you know, what is it that got you into comedy in the first place? I always like to ask.
Because I'm a failed actor. That's what it is, I think. I tried to be an actor for a lot of years, and acting is like all the time you're going through the audition process, and you're just like, please, could I do what I really want to do? And most, like, 99 times out of 100 people say, no, sorry. And after a decade of that kind of rejection, I was just like, you know what? There's got to be a way I could actually get on stage. And I was into writing too, and I wrote a couple screenplays, a couple really shitty horror movies that got made.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, what are they called? So people can check them out.
One of them's called Intercessor, another rock and roll nightmare, which was a sequel to an even shittier movie.
Really? So yeah. It was a rock and roll nightmare. What's that?
Yeah. Well, there's this guy by the name of Thor. He was a 1970s metal rocker from Vancouver, and he was like a bodybuilder guy that he did this movie in the 80s called Rock and Roll Nightmare. He approached a buddy of mine and was like, I want to make this movie about zombies and coming to these children and their dreams and saving them from all these undead. And he gave me like very little to go on. And initially it was going to be a 5-minute short. And then he just got really excited and he was like, can we make this a feature? So I just kept adding on characters like Zompyra, who's a mix between a vampire and a zombie, and a bunch of other things. It got made anyway, so you can check it out. It's on IMDb.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And anyway, so I really liked writing, and then you know, that was a way to kind of marry the two, was doing stand up where you can perform, you know, 5 nights a week fairly easily in this town, and you're writing your own material and performing it right there without asking for permission, most of the time. So yeah, it seemed like a natural thing to try. And there's a great class you can take in New Westminster. It's run by a lady by the name of Janice Bannister. And it's kind of an intro to stand-up kind of class. And a lot of people say you can't teach how to write comedy. You can't teach funny. And there's some truth to that, but you can definitely teach the structure of comedy. And I think for your first time on stage, if you go in there without a good structure to it, you're gonna really struggle to find your voice. And taking that class kind of boiled it down to a really tight 5-minute set that I could start with and immediately kind of get out and start doing all the different shows around town and not eat a dick every night. So
totally. I mean, I think you're totally right that there's a lot to be said for the fact that you can at least avoid a lot of pitfalls that people go over. And yeah, I mean, that's why I think anyone starting out as well should, yeah, definitely be talking to people who already do stand up and, you know, find out, yeah, like, what do I not do so I don't look like an idiot? And, you know, don't stick the mic in front of your face, all those little things that yeah. you wouldn't think otherwise, you know.
I think probably the biggest misconception people have is, you know, is they think they can just tell a story and the story's funny.
Yeah.
But if you have to take out a lot of the words in the story to make it funny.
Yeah, you got to know about, yeah, the rules of the economy of the words is so important. Yeah, absolutely. But also I think that people just don't realize that you have to actually have punchlines throughout the actual story.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Where, you know, if you're talking for a minute on stage and then your punchline comes and it turns out it wasn't as funny as you thought it was, and you don't got another one coming for a minute, that could be 2 minutes of talking on stage without a laugh. And if you're doing that, you're not doing comedy, you're storytelling.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, the longer you wait between the punchlines, the better it's got to be. To be mm-hmm. worth it, totally. Yeah. You know, otherwise people get really wound up after a while.
Yeah, it's almost, you can almost compare it to a DJ or something with this big build, and
yeah, just and a wet fart.
Better be great if it's, yeah, if it's a wet fart, then it's.
Yeah, no, it's true. Right, so when you write, like, where do you get your sort of inspiration from, and you know, what's your style of writing?
Yeah, well, I think for me, it's all very much almost all of my bits I can trace back to drunken conversations. Literally, and not necessarily wasted, but you know, having a few drinks, hanging around friends, you're talking about something funny comes up in that conversation spontaneously, and I'll immediately, if it sort of strikes me as, hey, that could be a bit, I'll just write it into my phone, and then I'll come back to it later. Now, you know, probably 50% of the time you come back to that bit and you either go, what the fuck was I talking about? Or you're like, okay, you had to be there. That's not actually funny for outside of me and my friend.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that's the toughest bit about stand-up is you have to very quickly give context. And it's very hard to give context except in just what you're saying. So it's... Yeah, like that's where I think the story sometimes struggles. Is it's too hard to build the context.
Yeah, in the amount of time that you get to kind of to work with it. Yeah, so it's, you know, the better bits are the ones that, you know, are more relatable, obviously, too. I mean, there's also that thing in comedy where, you know, a lot of the comedians I like will, you know, it'll be an obscure reference or something. And then, you know, for the people that get that obscure reference, it's hilarious. But then you're alienating a huge part of the crowd. So, but then at the same time, you don't want to be so hacky that you're just, you know, oh, airplane food. Oh, my God. What's the deal with that?
Yeah. No, it's true. And I think if you can sort of, maybe the answer to it is to have just so many in there that it's something for everyone also. You know, like if you're hitting enough of those, then, yeah, if people don't get a couple of them, they wouldn't mind. But it's a fine balance.
Yeah. Sometimes you just want to throw it in there for yourself. And,
yeah.
Or like one or two people you know are in the audience. And it's like, I don't care. I don't care if I get laughs. That one guy's going to like it. And
yeah. I wrote a kids play and I put in a reference to Them Crooked Vultures, which is like a Queens of the Stone Age spin-off band. No one would get that joke at all, except like one hipster dad in the audience would have been like, yeah.
Just clapping golf clap style. Like, yes.
Yeah, man. John Paul Jones. So what kind of stuff do you write? Obviously, we saw that clip there, and so that was sort of I guess it was sort of observational. Is that sort do you stick in that area, or
it's observational. I mean, I find that a lot of my humor does tend to drift into the sort of dick and fart joke territory, and I, you know,
easy dumb.
In my real life, I really do I follow politics. I think I'm quite an intelligent person, but for some reason my sense of humor just it goes to the lowest common denominator a lot. So, you know, I find that I like to play around a little bit with racial humor sometimes. You know, it's a very fine line for a white comic doing racial humor, and I always try to stay on the right side of the line. It's just, yeah, it's context, you know. Like I have a joke that I like that if you just look at it and you're not thinking about it, it comes across quite racist. And it's basically about the Kudo advertisement. You know,
right,
that one?
Yep, yep.
You got like a Mexican wrestler mascot, and that guy's every bad stereotype of a Mexican rolled into one. But that's fine. That's acceptable. But if you change out that racial stereotype to a Chinese one or a black one, and those are the examples I give, it sort of shocks the audience because, well, hey, that's racist. And then, you know, the point of that joke being like, hey, how come one is funny and the other one's racist? And the end of the joke is basically that because Mexicans can take a joke better than anyone else.
yeah. And that's it. Like you're maybe sort of talking about the culture of racism rather than actually talking
being
about,
racist.
Yeah. You know, rather than just suggesting a stereotype of somebody. Yeah. And that's true. I mean, like there's, I mean, Louis C.K. does a great bit on white privilege. Which is like, you know, something tough to talk about for some people. And like I've seen some rather irate interviews with people like, well, basically anyone who is on Fox News, basically.
Yeah, denying that it even exists.
There's no possible way it exists. Yeah.
Racism's not real.
Yeah, yeah. That was in the 60s, apparently. But, it is. About, and then that's it. It's just about being clever and having a point to make, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've been trying to get away from that a little bit in terms of like, you know, it would be great to have a good solid 20 or 30 minutes I could do that would fit an audience that was maybe a little more sort of PG or general than the more R-rated kind of blue humor. And especially when you're starting out, one of the things I really noticed when I listened to some of my older stuff is that, you know, you start dropping F-bombs into your set as a way of overcompensating because you can throw fuck in there sometimes and you'll get a laugh from a certain segment of people that are just thinking that fuck is still funny, even though we've been all saying it for our entire lives. And so I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to pull those out more and more and more and think about, is that joke funnier with the F-bomb there, or is that just being lazy?
Mm.
So some of that, and I'd like to be able to write less dick jokes, but dick jokes are still funny. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there is that sort of underbelly of comedy of the corporate gig world where if you want to like actually eat from doing comedy, then you kind of do that. And yeah, then maybe the clean stuff comes.
Yeah, I've had to turn out a couple of corporate gigs because I just look at my set and I'm like, I could do 10 minutes, but it's not enough. You know, so it's also, you know, you want to. Yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier too about you know you having the show and it forces you to write every week, and I think that's a really good impetus to make you write. Whereas in comedy, you can, you know, you take a bit and you craft that bit over time, and it gets better and better. But you might tell that joke 50, 100 times before you kind of get to where you like it, and then it's kind of a great joke, and then you actually get bored of telling it after a certain point after that. And even though you're going through the motions, the audience can tell you're not as into it as much, and it sort of fades. But it's a constant battle, I find, in just sort of forcing myself to write new material on a regular basis, because you can coast on older stuff, feel good about a set.
Well, and you get that, you get comfortable. You get totally comfortable, and it's safe, and you know it sort of will do all right all the time. It might not kill, but it's not going to fail horribly.
It's safe comedy.
Yeah. And I felt that too, where I'll write a bunch of stuff, and the ones I would end up keeping would be the dick jokes and those ones, because they went over better because they're more universal and they're broad and they're simple and then you look at your set and you're like, I'm not saying anything anymore. But when I wasn't killing. So it's tough. But I think the answer is that you can do more of that stuff once you've won the audience. You kind of have to sort of, like, I think maybe start with the broader stuff.
Yeah,
get their attention, and then like lead them into the nitty gritty, and actually, you know, like I think Stanhope does a good job of that, where he has some just fairly crass, sort of ridiculous things about like China's doing her anal video and those sort of things that have no value really, but are hilarious. And then he'll say something about immigration and kill it. So.
Sneak in, yeah, the different topics. Yeah, and I think that's the other rule too, is you never want to go out and do all new material.
Yeah,
you always, you know, like keep some tried and true stuff and then, you know, swap in a new bit into the mix. So even if that bombs, because that's, I mean, yeah, it's very rare that you would write, you know, 5-10 minutes of new material, go up on stage, and then it would all kill. That's probably never happened in the history of comedy.
Yeah, not unless it's just like your 50th year and you finally just, you know, reached the zen point of enlightenment of comic form. Yeah,
everything out of your mouth is just masterpiece.
Yeah, you just know straight away. Yeah, no, I think only Carlin reached that. I don't think anybody else is allowed to. But,
yeah, I mean, sometimes you watch comics that have been doing it for a long time and you almost think to yourself, is it, have they earned so much capital with the audience that they can really literally just talk and not even have to have bits anymore?
Well, that's totally it. There's so many, I'm not to knock any like of the big pros, but there are a few pros where I watch their later sets and I do wonder, I'm like, if he says this on an amateur night in the middle of Vancouver, would he just get ignored and talked over by a bunch of impatient drunks? Like, I think maybe.
Yeah, I watched, I saw Dave Chappelle when he came to town, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago. And I really enjoyed it. It was really entertaining. But, you know, he literally just kind of walked around on the Queen Elizabeth stage and smoked cigarettes for like about 90 minutes. And it was just, they were kind of anecdotes of what his life's been like for the last little while. And there was funny parts, but a lot of it, you know, it's just people that are curious about a celebrity at some point.
Well, yeah, I mean, the worst example of that I've seen was I went and saw Russell Brand when he came a couple of years ago. It was the year of the Olympics, because he did a whole bit about that. But yeah, it was basically just him flicking his hair and chatting up different women in the crowd that had just come to scream at him. And then he called a German transsexual prostitute from the newspaper, the Georgia Strait, live on stage, which was quite funny. But I don't think that's not super original. I mean, people have done that one, but yeah, it wasn't bad. Wasn't worth $90. No offense, Russell, but
it's tricky. I mean, it's been a fun little journey for me, really, kind of doing this. It's like I say, you know, I'm only doing it for about 4 years or so, and you know, you kind of, it seems like initially when you start off, you're like anything, you're kind of fresh faced, you're not jaded at all, and you think, you know, you're going to be the next big thing, and then you know, you start working and you have some successes and you're like, oh, I'm going to be headlining any day now. And then, you know, you realize that it's a pretty tough slog, and it really does come down to hard work, and I find myself being a bit lazy sometimes, and I think that's probably the thing that holds me back the most in comedy is that I'm not out there 5 nights a week. I'm quite content to do a show or two a week. And there's guys that do, you know, 12 shows a week.
Yeah.
Just doing all the open mics possible in this town. And it's a great comedy community here. And it's there's a lot more opportunities. Like, people in Canada seem to, like, have an impression that Toronto's where you got to go to make it. And I think it's an inferiority complex towards Toronto that the whole country feels. But there's great opportunities there. And I've done comedy there, too. And there's more shows, but I wouldn't say there's proportionately more shows to the amount of comics in Toronto. So in Vancouver, there is actually more stage time opportunities here, I think, than probably any other city in Canada. So it's
really,
I think so.
Yeah, because I mean, you got to figure if everyone thinks Toronto's the place to be, they're all going to be there anyway. So
just population based, right? I mean, they got what, 8 million people there, or 5 million people, or whatever. So it's just a bigger city, and doesn't mean there's that many more rooms.
Yeah, no, not necessarily. Because, I mean, there is a phenomenal amount of places at the moment that you can watch comedy in and perform. Like, it's just an endless amount of them.
Yeah.
Are there any particular favorites of yours? That's always a good thing to find out. Like, where do you think is the best place to go watch comedy? Besides, like, the Comedy Mix and the Yuck Yucks. But,
some of the other rooms that are going on around town. I'm kind of excited to do a show. I'm doing a show on May 19th at the King's Head.
King's Head, yeah.
Yeah, and Kingshead, I haven't actually been there yet, but
it keeps a lot of people keep saying that one's a really good one, definitely.
Yeah, and it's and I've been hearing nothing but good things about it, so I really want to check it out. And what else is going on that's kind of good these days? I mean, the Displace is another good kind of kits comedy room that I try to pop into regularly that Patrick Malia runs, and it's kind of hit and miss what you get with the crowd there. But,
whereabouts is that one?
It's on 4th and Blenheim.
Oh, okay. All right, so it's right down in Kits.
Yeah, not far from here. There's a lot of shows going on. You kind of go into this phase, though, in the summer where the shows, there's less shows happening. where, you know, the bars are kind of busy on their own. They don't need comedy to draw people in. Mm. And so, and plus, you know, it's harder too when it's light out till 9:30 and you're trying to get a comedy show started. Daylight's a killer for comedy.
Outdoor comedy is not quite the same. Like, it's, yeah. I've done a couple of those. They were a bit weird. I did a real estate gig in like this outdoor restaurant in Kelowna, and that mm-hmm. was, yeah, it was just weird. All these very hoity-toity people sipping wine, like trying to do weird stoner jokes. But anyway, all right, we're gonna go for a song, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna chat some more. So I hope you enjoy this. This is a graffiti-ition. However you say it.
For a leaf, I count on the river, I cut the trees, I ask with my pleas. The mountains begin their speech and they say that I'm lonely when I'm not gone. And they say that I can't leave, but what do they know? Count my needs, I turn my keys. The prairies begin their speech and they say that I'm lonely when I'm not gone. And they say that I can't leave, but what do they know? Do they know? Do they know? Fields, red winged blackbirds in the weeds, and tears on your sleeves. The prairies begin their speech, and they say that I'm lonely when I'm not gone. And they say that I can't leave, but what do they know? Do they know? Do they know? Do they know? What have you told? Could they know? Could they know? What have you told? Have you told? How could they know? Could they know? What have you told? Have you told? How could they know? Could they know? What have you told? Have you told?
March weather.
This issue of Discorder, there's no more Discorder. Discorder is over. Vancouver housing crisis, earthquakes, flash floods, Richmond underwater. There's no more Discorder ever. 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 Discorder ever.
Spring is here. This April, Discorder, pick up an issue ever, of Discorder, Discorder from a local ever, venue or record Discorder, store for ever, articles on Sumac, Snit, Saradavachi, Record Store Day, and more. Special thanks to this month's advertisers, Levitation Fest, Rickshaw Theater, Light Organ Records, Beat Merchant, Red Cat Records, Neptune Records, Horses Records, Audiopile Records, Dandelion Emporium, High Life Records, Vinyl Records, Live Van, and AMS Events.
April makes fools of us all.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Alright, that was Gravtition with Cows in the Fields. That was a cracking track there. That was Roxanne Nesbitt is, who's performed all that. And yeah, she's really good. She's actually out of Vancouver. So definitely check her out on SoundCloud. I think she's cracking, so I definitely think you guys should look her up. She's got lots more good songs on her SoundCloud. So I'm back in the studio with Chris Allen. We're chatting about comedy as per usual. So one question I wanted to ask you, Chris. I know, you know, in your bio you talk about how you went into the corporate world and then you've sort of come back now and started, you know, doing stand-up. So what was the change there that made you think, I need to get back into this?
Well, I guess, I mean, I have kind of like my job is completely different than comedy. I run a small internet service provider.
Oh, nice.
That does internet connectivity into really small towns all around the province. So I have I'm the president of a company of about 45 people. So it's a total departure and a sort of serious job at times. So having that artistic outlet to do comedy is really important, I think, and just being silly, which, you know, I think ultimately every comic, the main thing behind them is that they're never turning off their inner child, right?
And they just need an outlet, definitely. And whether it's for attention or just pride or whatever it is, they get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, just have fun, right? I mean, that's the worst is when comedy stops being fun. and you go through those phases for sure with everybody where it's just, it feels like work. You're trying to find gigs and you can't get gigs, or, you know, you're just bad audiences. And
yeah, you're just not getting the feedback you're after.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, it can be a slog. But you know, with anything you do in life, you get into those kind of ruts. You just got to keep doing it, and eventually you'll get out and improve again.
Yeah, no, I definitely. So, I mean, what's your sort of thoughts on, like, where do you want to go with it now? Do you want to just keep sort of plodding on as you are? Like, do you have any plans for, like, sort of where you want to go in the future with it?
Yeah, I'd like to, I think the goal for everybody is to start, you know, trying to get more weekend paid gigs. There's a kind of, you go through your process of being an open mic kind of guy, and you get more and more material, and you get enough material where you could, you know, do a good job of middling, but then trying to find good middling spots on weekends is really tough. There's probably about 15 really good pros in Vancouver, and deservedly so. They eat up most of the stage time that you're going to get in the paid comedy club gigs. So you got to start looking a little bit outside of the city a bit too. I wouldn't mind doing some stuff in the interior a bit this summer.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, I know a lot of comics are having success going out to Kelowna. I think you're talking about going in June. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Kelowna in June. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
And, which show is that going to be at?
I don't have a show actually lined up yet, but I was going to get a hold of David Kopp, the guy there that books a lot of shows.
Nice. I think that's Dakota's, I believe. I think is where he's out of at the moment down there.
Yeah.
No, they got a good little scene down there. Anywhere else you fancy in the interior?
I think I'd like to get to. There's a guy that's running shows in Quinnell, and my company has a big office in Quinnell, so I'm there actually. Anyway, and I have a lot of friends in Cornell as a result, so I could probably get a good crowd out. So I was going to reach out to him.
Funny enough, yeah, I hear quite a few comics going down to, or up rather, up to Cornell to do comedy. Like, yeah, no, Kelowna as well when I was there. Like, there was always the running joke about, oh, yeah, I've made it, I'm going to Cornell now.
Yeah, or Prince George, you know, like, it's surreal. It's not a glamorous road life for the comics around BC, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it can be a beautiful province in the summer anyway.
It's true. You just don't want to do it in like December is a terrible time to go do that.
I don't think people come out for comedy up north in the winter.
I don't know, not much else going on probably, so
Netflix, man. Netflix has taken away everybody's social life.
Oh dear. All right, well, actually, Blumenek, that is 9 o'clock. We are out of time. Thank you so much for coming in today, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Simon. That was super fun.
No worries, I much appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with another special guest and another half hour of sketch comedy. So definitely join us again then. In the meantime, I hope you guys have a lovely week and enjoy the end of exams. And I hope you all get really drunk and ridiculous and enjoy yourselves. So good night.
Climb so high, fell so low, keep me spinning. I don't know which way is the beginning.